And all right, back to D.C. Stadium for Dave Fleming, our weatherman. Dave, how are you?
Once again, live from Nationals Park here in Washington, the rain continues to fall and fall heavily. Maybe not quite as hard as it was just a few minutes ago. It was a true downpour a few minutes ago, still lightning all around the area. So the band of severe weather has definitely arrived. And it's been here for a little while now, probably 20 minutes or so of true heavy rain and thunderstorms. And that's why we're in a rain delay here. We have not started this game. It's supposed to be the first game of this three-game series. Giants and the Nationals, Jeff Samardzija and Edwin Jackson, the starting matchup. Giants announced before the game that Mark Melancon has been activated. So Melancon is back and available tonight. Buster Posey is in the lineup. And Bruce Bochy is really hoping that he and the Giants will be able to play this game with already a doubleheader scheduled for tomorrow. And I think that we will play this game. It's just a question of when. The field has taken on now a tremendous amount of water. That said, all of these fields in this part of the country are built with the drainage systems that are extremely powerful. And typically, once the rain actually stops, we see the fields drain very quickly. It is going to take a while for the ground crew to get the field ready to go. But we also have to let the starting pitchers go through their warm-up routines, which is about a half-hour process before the game would start anyway. So I'm guessing that whenever the rain stops, we will still have 35, maybe even 45 minutes before we could start the game. Looking at the radar, amateur meteorologists that we are, it appears as if we still have some period of rain to pass through before it's all over. Maybe 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. Who knows? Could be even longer than that. The wind has definitely died down, which is not great because it means that the storm system is kind of settled over us as opposed to blowing through very quickly. But the rain and the thunder, lightning and the thunder, rather, have moved to a different part of the sky. So these violent storms are making their way through downtown Washington, D.C., where we sit. That's a long-winded way of saying it's still raining, it's still storming, and we still do not have any idea when we will start this game tonight, the Giants and the Nationals. So we'll come back at the bottom of the hour, 8:30 local time, 5:30 Pacific, for another update, a live update on the weather situation. So stick with us. We hope we've got a ball game for you here on your Giants radio network.
All right, back here. David, are you there? Are you there?
I'm here, Marty.
Oh, good. Very good. Oh, good. Thanks for hanging in there. It sounds like the storm has kind of stayed put a little bit.
Yeah, you almost welcome the winds and the gusts because then, okay, the storm's moving fast, and that's what we got right when it arrived. All of a sudden, the wind changed. You could really smell, you know, that people here in this part of the world say that, and it's true. You can smell the rain coming, and with the wind, we could see the line of storms. The good news is that in the last couple minutes, we can see the lights inside the Capitol Dome again. So visibility is getting better. Even just 5 minutes ago, that was totally obscured by the heavy rain and the overcast. So now I think the storm system is moving through. It's just a question of how much longer this it's much lighter, but it's still a pretty reasonable downpour. How much longer this lasts.
All right. Well, we're having fun on the air. I don't know if you got to hear any of it, but, you know, it was sort of spurred on by Carlos Moncrief's throw the other day. That was sort of a Clemente-like throw, and the fans are calling in sort of giving their best arms they've ever seen or the best throws they've ever seen. So I said, well, let's get David on and ask Dave, because you've seen enough ball over your time as part of baseball. Best arm that you can come up with that you've seen?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it does sound crazy to say Carlos Moncrief is in that conversation, but I do think he's kind of in that conversation. Just pure, okay, I've seen one throw. Who's got the strongest arm? He's got one of them. It was amazing. I remember a throw. Maybe you guys have already talked about it. I can't remember if it was last year or the year before. Remember when Hunter Pence went into a slide in foul territory?
Yes.
Catching a ball right near the bullpen mound in right field at AT&T Park and kind of popped up and spun around all in one motion and fired on the fly to home plate and got a guy who was trying to tag up on a foul ball.
Yep.
it was like a jaw dropping. You know, it wasn't just pure okay from the warning track throw all the way. It wasn't just a pure power throw, but it was a throw that I thought was one of the greats considering the game situation that I've ever seen. The guy who I love to watch throw as a baseball fan, as a broadcaster, but even before that, before I even got into this, just as a fan, was Vladimir Guerrero. I loved Vladimir's arm, and I loved everything about him. He just seemed like he was just such a fun player who had, he was the ultimate tools guy, and I loved, even back in the old Montreal days of just watching him let it fly.
Yeah, Vladimir Guerrero, absolutely. First of all, the Pence play was a tremendous play. I want to say against the Phillies, but I don't remember. But, yeah, it was a play in the foul territory, jumped up near the bullpen, I think, and came up and made the throw to the plate. It was unbelievable. But for Guerrero, what I remember about him was batting practice. Now, there's certain people in batting practice. Tony Perez was one. Mark McGwire was one. Guerrero was one. His batting practice, it was like he was in a little league field. That's the way he hit the ball. And he should be a Hall of Famer. I think he's coming up next year, I think.
Yeah, and I think he would. Well, no, Vladimir was on the ballot this year, right?
Was he? Okay.
And he came real close. I think he got, what's the threshold, 75%?
75, yeah.
And I think he got 73 or something like that. So he got very close. I think next year he will get in.
Oh, good.
And I'm glad because, to me, the Hall of Fame was meant for guys like him. I mean, you can parse his career down and say, how long did he play? And what does the WAR say? Was his defensive value the same at the end of the career? And you can sort of get lost in the weeds on, how valuable he is relative to other Hall of Famers. But that guy, to me, when you watched him play, almost every year of his career, you thought Hall of Famer. You know, it was like he was just so spectacular, and the consistency of the numbers, but also the consistency of all the other stuff that he did. I'm not all touchy-feely when it comes to that stuff. I'm not one of these guys who said, I know it when I see it, and I don't care about the numbers. I'm not like that. I'm not cranky like that. But I think Vladimir is one of those guys where the numbers, you don't necessarily need the numbers to support the idea that he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, plus if you threw the ball on a bounce, he would hit it. He swung
it
everything.
He actually could. He did. You're right about that. He did. You're right. Ichiro, I think, did that a couple times. There are not many people who are good enough to do something that silly and pull it off, and he could.
Yeah, the bad ball hitters. For me, of course, the legend was Yogi Berra. Manny Sanguian, a bad ball hitter. Guys who just would go out of the strike zone. And Pablo. Look, Pablo is very similar to that, a bad ball hitter.
He was. And even to this day, if you ask Justin Verlander about a couple of those home runs in the World Series against him, he still can't believe that Pablo hit those pitches out. I mean, Verlander is sort of, he said that to me a couple different times across the way when I've encountered him for network games or whatever. Where I still, that pitch. Go watch that pitch. He can't hit that out. There's no way he can do that. And that's. I think that's what Vladimir did. Was he had pitchers sort of talking to themselves about no way. There's no way he could hit the pitch that I threw where he hit it.
Well, of course, Verlander says that about every hit he gives up. He's got that look on the mound when he gives up a
hit.
That
is a fact. He does.
Right? Like he can't believe it.
And even now, if you talk to him now, and I'm not. Criticizing you for this, although I think you're exactly right. I mean, now it's like, oh, look at the ball. The ball's, the ball's different. Obviously, it's different. There's a reason for everything that goes wrong for him. There's some other reason why. It's not just his own lack of performance on any particular day.
No, that World Series game. Remember, Jeff Jones came out to the mound. He didn't even want to see him. He said, look, don't worry, I have it under control. And the next pitch was gone.
Boom. That's right. That's a good memory. Those are that one, and then the throw from Blanco to Scudero to Posey, and Romo against Cabrera. Those are probably the memories of that World Series for me.
And Uribe hitting the home run against the Phillies. How about that one?
For sure. That was a great one.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be in this booth and not think of Brandon Belt in the 18th inning, and really even before that. Because that game, not just the Belt home run, but taking Zimmerman out and a hit against, I guess it was Storin. Drew Storin. Yeah. And just the whole way that thing played out, Yusmeiro Petit and then Brandon Belt. That when we come back here to Washington, it's impossible to not think of those moments. Because we were in this very booth. We were sitting right where I'm sitting now, and it was as cold as I've ever... That 18-inning game, we finally did sort of at least half-close the booth because it was amazingly cold here. That night, we never do that. I don't think there's any other game that we've ever done where we've closed the windows just purely because it's been cold, and we had to do it that night.
Boy, amazing. And you know what's funny about that? With Hudson and Peavy, I could be wrong, but they pitched the first two games, and I don't think they pitched another good inning after that. But those first
I don't think they did. Good inning, maybe there was one or two, but I think essentially you're right. But I do think that that's a good point. When you look back on those guys' Giants' careers and those seasons in particular, you better appreciate those two performances because that was the whole, to me, that set the whole thing up for the Giants because the reason, it's not just that the Nationals thought they had a better team than the Giants, and they certainly did think that, but the Giants had to play the wild card game and they had to use Bumgarner.
Right.
And so everybody thought that the Nationals had the huge advantage because of that, that Bumgarner was already used. And look, it's Strasburg and Peavy and it's Zimmerman and Hudson.
Right.
And there's no way the Giants can match up there. And they don't even get Bumgarner until game three. And by then it'll be too late. And the fact that Peavy and Hudson did what they did, to me, set the stage for the whole Giants World Series run.
Absolutely. And plus, Bumgarner lost game three.
He did.
How
maybe
that
was Strasburg. Maybe that was Strasburg. Maybe I'm getting their.
Well,
their
Strasburg, I think, pitched the first one, and Zimmerman pitched the second one. And
yeah,
then
that's
I think
what
it was
thought,
Bumgarner lost. But Bumgarner ends up losing game three, and they still. What a crazy, crazy time. Wasn't that nuts?
Yeah, that was a weird series. And Bumgarner, I think Bumgarner had his own throwing error in that game.
Yes, on the left field line.
That cost him, and he actually pitched well, but. Giants didn't swing the bats, and he made that big error. But you're right. Yeah, that's the only game they lost in that series was the one that their all-time playoff postseason hero lost.
Well, that's why, you know, I know we've got to go back to you here in a minute or two, but it's good to talk with you. But that's the whole Dodger story. You know, you walk in, you're going to win 115 games, and you walk into one game, and all of a sudden you lose it, and everything turns around.
Everything turns around, and that's why this sport is so different. And you and I have talked about that a million times. But this sport is just so different in that way. And one bad performance by one player can sabotage the whole thing. But, you know, if one of your starters that you're counting on has just an awful night, the whole thing can be derailed. And it really just takes one game. I mean, frankly, you and I will have lots of other chances to discuss this as we get closer, but... I look at this Nationals team and then look at the Dodgers team, and statistically the Dodgers are superior, and in a lot of different ways they are. But to me, the players who have made up that statistical difference are players like 23, 4, and 5, or 21, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on the big league rosters. And in the playoffs, those guys don't matter nearly as much. I mean, I think that the top four starters, the top three relievers, and your core lineup, those are the guys that matter in the playoffs. And to me, the Nationals match up absolutely with the Dodgers. Now, it may be that the Dodgers just steamroll them because they've been so good. But the biggest difference for me in the regular season has been the guys who probably aren't going to make much of a difference in the postseason.
Yeah, well, I know we got to run back to you, so we'll let you go. But if you want to chat afterwards, we'd love to have you. But Strasburg, for me, is the key for Washington, because if somehow Scherzer loses the first game, they better have him in the second game. And he hasn't pitched yet, so who knows what will happen with him.
Yeah, well, if you want to talk afterwards, I'm happy to.
Yeah,
I'm doing nothing
chat.
Here.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Do the update, and we're going to throw it back to Dave. Thanks, David. Okay. All right, we're going to throw it back to Dave here in just 30 seconds. Great to talk to him. You know, this is what rain delays used to be in baseball. They'd never throw it back to the studio. You know, the great announcers would keep it there, and they would just talk like this, you know, for an hour or two, and they would make recordings of it and sell recordings, you know, you know, what, 33 and a third, Raph? Is that what records look like? I don't even remember what they look like. And they were very famous things. All right, so we're going to throw it back to Dave and get his update right now.
All right, we are indeed back here live at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C., and the storm is on its way out. That is good news. We are finally starting to see some activity from the grounds crew down below. They are hooking up drainage hoses, and really, truly, I wish I could get a camera picture, get my camera down there, because the dugout on the first base side and the camera well and even a couple rows of seats right next to the dugout are under, I don't know how many feet of water, but a lot of water. So they're having to empty the dugout with a suction hose out into the warning track area where there's better drainage down the right field line. It gives you an idea of how much rain did fall here. It was a lot. And those grounds crew folks who are down there trying to help unclog whatever problem that is are up to their knees in water. There's standing water all over the outfield, and that's even before the tarp has been empty. They got to dump all the water that's sitting on top of the tarp, and there's a lot of water on top of the tarp, out into the outfield, let those suction pumps take over and suck all that water down below surface level. There's standing water on the warning tracks. It's probably going to take some time to unclog those drains and help get that water gone, and then use some of the drying agent. They did. The infield is in great shape. It never rained on the infield, so that's a good thing. And I imagine that now they are in the process of discussing a potential start time so that they can tell the starting pitchers and get everybody ready to warm up and start this game. So that is good news. It was a violent storm and a heavy rainstorm that passed through. But the Capitol Dome now, just off maybe a mile or two out into downtown D.C. from where we sit here at Nationals Park, is brightly lit up. We can see it just as clear as we could before the rain came. So it gives us an idea that the bulk of the storm is gone. It's just still drizzling out, but a very light rain is falling. We are now an hour and a half into the rain delay, though, so it's been a significant delay. And we're not real close to starting, although closer, I think, than we were just a few minutes ago because of the fact that now it looks like the severe weather is moving out. So I'm sure they're starting to make some decisions. As soon as we hear anything from the folks here, assuming we hear anything from the folks here, we will pass it along. We'll come back with another update at 8:45 local, 5:45 Pacific. But I think now we are making progress towards actually starting a baseball game here from Nationals Park on your Giants radio network.
All right, that sounds good, Dave. I like that. Is David there?
Yeah, it's better.
Oh, good.
I mean,
much better.
As we were talking, I mean, we can still see lightning flashes off in the distance, but as you and I were talking, those grounds crew folks are starting to hop out. I mean, really, they do. They've got the big blue hose. They're trying to suck all the water out of the Nationals dugout, which is significant, and pump that down the line where they have some drainage holes, where, you know, because every one of these stadiums in this part of the world has, you know, they layer the field with, like, you know, sand and gravel, and then another layer of sand and another layer of gravel, and in the midst of all that, they've got these giant pumps that suck the water out from the surface. And they do have actual, real, true drainage here. So they're trying to get all the standing water out toward the drains where it can be sucked down below the surface of the field. They've got an army of kids with squeegees coming out to start to get the water off the tarp. So not perfect. It's still drizzling a little bit. But I think, you know, there's activity out there as opposed to everybody just sitting around doing nothing, which means we've kind of started the slow process to get ready for a game.
Well, I remember at AT&T, there was a game Lincecum pitched, I think against Atlanta, and was it a playoff game? I forget what it was, but remember it poured, and I don't know, I think it started at 4 o'clock. I mean, that's how late, that's how long the delay was. And I remember, I think Greg Elliott had the big pumps and the squeegees and all that out there.
Yeah.
And Lincecum ran down to the bullpen to warm up. It looked like a little league kid, you know? You know, like he just got dropped off by his parents, and he ran down there to warm, and he went out and struck out like 12 or something like that.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know? How about Lincecum, Dave, when you think, you know, how about Lincecum when you just think back what this guy did?
Well, and I still get people all over, wherever I go in San Francisco, people still ask me about him and what's he up to, and Yeah, he's always going to be remembered as the key player to bridge the Bonds era to the modern Giants. I mean, Bonds was modern, but this current era of Giants baseball. He was the guy who, in the midst of, you know, a Giants team that was really struggling outside of Bonds hitting all those home runs and looking for energy and excitement and youth and young talent. I mean, he was the guy who showed up on the scene and was just totally legitimate. And I think that was huge for the psychology of the franchise, for the stability of the franchise. You know, there was some heat starting to build on Brian Sabian and those guys, even with their great track record of have they lost their touch and all. And Lincecum helped alleviate a lot of that just by being so fantastic. And it made Sabian and everybody look so good for picking. They picked him 10th or whatever, you know. All these other teams were passing on him, and they found a guy who looked like just a total Hall of Famer almost from the moment he showed up. And, you know, there have been lots of great moments that he had, the no-hitters and whatnot. But the playoffs start against Atlanta
right. In
that game one in 2010. And then even, you know, a couple of the relief appearances mm-hmm. a few years later, which to me were almost as memorable in their own way. You know, Lincecum, if it's a shame for me, the shame of Lincecum was his best years, 08, 09, were just before the Giants were ready to be great on the big stage. Mm. And 10, he was great, but not quite as dominant, not quite as great. And I do look back, and my one regret with Tim was that I wish his just total peak, where he was as good as basically any pitcher in the history of the Giants, I wish that synced up perfectly with the Giants in 2010, 11, 12, and whatnot.
And he started to hit. Remember, he started to get hits?
He did. I always thought that was a mystery with him because I always thought he should have been a better hitter. And I'm not saying he wasn't trying to be, but I do think that somehow Tim needed to either concentrate more on that. And I almost the same thing applied to his inability to hold down a running game. He was very tough on Buster Posey and all of his catchers because he just... And part of it was the funkiness of the delivery, but this guy was such a phenomenal athlete. I just thought it just doesn't make sense that he can't master that part of the game, that he can't learn to handle the bat better, that he can't learn to hold down the running game, make, you know, vary his moves, be a little quicker to home plate, all that stuff that for a guy with his athletic ability probably should have been a little more simple than it was. If you remember to ask Bruce Bochy about, because, you know, we always heard the stories when he was coming up. I had friends in the Giants minor league system who had him, you know, he wasn't in the minor leagues for very long, but it was like, this guy can walk from foul pole to foul pole on his hands. He can do backflips, you know, for 100 feet in a row and all this goofy stuff that he could do. Ask Bruce Bochy sometime. Bochy and I were sitting, each of us, and I think Dwayne Kuiper was there. We kind of sit in the front of the bus with Bochy, so we're in the first couple seats, and we were getting off of a plane. So the buses pull up on the tarmac right next to the stairs of the plane. So we walk down the stairs, walk right on the bus. That's how it works with the Giants traveling party. And so one day, Bochy and Kuiper and I were sitting in the first couple rows of the team bus, and we're facing the stairs. And Tim was usually in the back of the plane, and the players would come out last. We would sort of get off first, and so we were already in our seats. And here comes Lincecum, and it's just, I mean, this is going to be hard to describe, and your listeners are thinking, Fleming's just lost his mind here. But Lincecum walked out of the plane and got to the top of those aluminum airplane steps. You know, you could picture him coming down to the tarmac. And I kid you not, it was like in the blink of an eye, he was at the bottom of the steps. It was like his feet were not touched. He came down so fast. We all thought he was going to kill himself. He came down the stairs. I mean, literally, it took him like a second and a half to get 30 stairs from the top to the bottom. The guy had the fastest, quickest. To me, it made him look like he could have been in the Olympics as a gymnast. And Bochy and I still will laugh about that sometimes, where it was one of the most amazing things we ever saw Lincecum do was walk down the stairs of an airplane, because you've never seen anything like it. It really truly was like an optical illusion, and to me that's kind of what made him so fun. He was just different and unique, and there are lots of little moments like that along the way with Tim.
You know, one of the most unique players in Giants history. I mean, honestly, you could go back to, you know, the names of the past and some of the ones that, you know, we've had recently. But for an impact on a franchise or uniqueness as a player, and you can talk about McCovey and Cepeda and everybody, Gaylord Perry, this guy is in there for what he accomplished. And I'll tell you, for me, the two no-hitters, to see the joy in this kid's face after, what, 145 pitches against San Diego, I think that's a great Giants moment.
Oh, for sure. That and I don't know, I was just the other day I was talking about that one too, and the stress level of that no-hitter. that I'll never forget that, where Bochy's pacing around and Pence makes the catch, and that one in San Diego where you know, it was 144 pitches or whatever it was, and how long can you stick with this guy? And that, you know, that's another thing that I'll always appreciate about the Giants, always. And I get it when other teams do it, and you can have an endless argument and debate about, is it worth it to let a guy do that if there's some ill effects afterwards? And Lincecum, I mean, you look at the stats that year, the next few starts after that were not very good. You know, maybe it hurt the Giants in some way that year with his performance after pushing him so hard there, but wasn't it worth it for that moment? I mean, that's what sports are for. Like, I just, you know, they're for winning and for winning championships and all this, but the idea that you have to optimize everything, that you have to optimize every situation and analyze every situation. Sometimes, you know what? It's just fun for a guy to try to pitch a no-hitter. And if he does, he does. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But to worry about the other stuff takes away, for me, what the point of all this kind of is. And I think Bruce Bochy and the Giants have always appreciated that, and I think Giants fans have too.
So what happened to Lincecum? Where did it all go? What happened?
Well, my theory, and it's just my amateur theory on Lincecum, was, you know, he was a guy who was so beholden to quick twitch, fast twitch muscles. I mean, he just was a guy who he crafted that those mechanics based on the fact that he could fire his flexibility and muscles so violently in exactly the right way. And that produced 95, 96 and all the deception and everything else. And it only took him getting a little, you know, he wasn't old, but it only took him getting a little older and a little less quick and those reflexes and reactions slowing down just a little bit. And for him, it was like a cascade effect where it just was not the same. And everything was so predicated on things being precisely right and as fast and as explosive as they possibly could be. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Tim was too reliant on that, and maybe he was a little stubborn, and maybe he could have earlier in his career moved away from that and tried to figure out a different way to approach pitching, maybe with a little less velocity, a little more conventional, but I don't know. Maybe he could have held on for longer or reinvented himself, but he was stubborn with that stuff.
Yes.
And I think once that athleticism left just a little bit, for him, that affected him more than almost any other guy I've ever seen in this sport.
Yeah, the release point just wasn't there, and he just couldn't get that consistent release point.
Kruko always talks about cracking the whip as a pitcher, and there are lots of different ways to get there, but if you've ever tried to actually crack a whip, maybe nobody does that anymore, but, you know, it's got to be perfect, otherwise it just kind of limps. You got to get the timing exactly right to get the crack that you want, and for Lincecum, that whip action, it just had to be exactly perfectly right, and once it wasn't, all of a sudden the stuff was much, much different.
Yeah, boy, pitchers throughout history, you gave a good image of cracking the whip. Drysdale was like that. You know, he would come through like that. The great Yul Blackwell in the 40s was like that. Boy, right-handers can scare you, can't they, when they come around like that?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Randy Johnson probably scares some people,
yeah,
too.
About that.
But that's, you know, the power pitchers always have that factor of not just great talent and stuff, but there is, you know, frankly, and that's sort of the, I don't know, it's the hidden part of this game. Maybe it's not so hidden, but the fear factor is alive and well in this sport. It just is, and it's a sport that's dangerous, and those guys who really, really throw hard, that's a part of their arsenal, the fear factor.
Look at Pedro. How about him?
Pedro was borderline. You know, I would argue Pedro, as much as I love watching him pitch, he was borderline dirty.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Pedro went after guys and was unapologetic about it, and I never liked that about him, but he was pretty open about it, and then he would come to the plate as a National Leaguer, and he still did it, so it's not like he just hid in the American League behind the designated hitter, not at all.
All right, we got to go back to you. All right, take it away, David.
All right, so another update here from Nationals Park, and while we've been talking, whether you're on our Giants flagship station or just joining us here live at this second, we've been talking the last 15 minutes. There has been a lot of activity out on the field. They've gotten a good amount of the standing water off of the warning tracks, off of the they've pumped a lot of that water that was collected in the dugout and the camera well out of there. That's all good stuff. But the tarp is still on the field, and it's still raining. Now, it's not raining hard. It's a much, much lighter rain than it was. But I don't think they're going to pull the tarp off until the rain really either tapers off entirely or down to a real drizzle. And right now, I don't think you'd call it that. They've got six or seven grounds crew members with squeegees out there pushing the water off the tarp toward the grass where you have that drainage suction system. So part of that work is happening now as we speak, which is a good thing. That might quicken the pace once they can actually pull the tarp off the field. But we're still in a rain delay, and the tarp is still out there. So we're approaching 2 hours now of rain delay with no real end in sight. This is a long one, and we're going to wait. I'm sure of it. We are going to wait until we can start a game. And when we do, it'll be Samardzija against Edwin Jackson, the pitching matchup here tonight for what will be game one, supposed to be game two, but it will be game one of this Giants-Nationals series. So still in rain delay mode. If you're one of our affiliates across our Giants radio network, continue to monitor our flagship, and we'll come back at the top of the hour, 9 o'clock local, 6 o'clock Pacific, for another update on your Giants radio network.
All right. David, are you back?
I'm back.
You're
I'm
still
here.
Working. All right.
Very I'm still
good.
Here.
Very good. I'm glad to talk with you. You know, this is what rain delay baseball was always about when I grew up. You know, the great Wade Hoyt and Ralph Kiner and all those people. They would talk for a couple hours and just talk about baseball. It was really
there was no Marty Lurie back then.
No, they didn't throw it back to the studio, pal.
There was nobody to help out.
No, they didn't. It was Alan Freed with rock and roll. That was whatever you had then. But Pedro.
And it is too bad in a way, in a funny way for us, and everybody I think knows now we've been doing it for years and years on our Giants network. But, you know, they're the four of us, Dwayne and Mike and John and I, and we don't have a replacement. Now, we're using Affeld and Lopez, and we love having those guys with us. But as far as play-by-play guys, it's the three of us, and that's it. So now that Mike's travel schedule is a little different than it used to be, and Dwayne happens to have just this weekend off, but we don't get rain delays in division, right? I mean, when we're in San Diego or Arizona, or maybe every once in a while in Colorado, but all the weather comes away from the National League West, and those are the games where we're most likely to be down a broadcaster. So a lot of times in these rain delay situations, most of the time, it's when one of us, in this case me, is alone. And it's hard to do rain delay broadcasting when you're just sitting there talking to yourself. I mean, no offense to Darren, who I love talking to, but it's not that interesting. Yeah, Darren's ticked off now. Maybe not that interesting for the audience to hear me have a one-sided conversation. Now we could get Darren on the microphone, I guess, but the point is that a lot of these rain delays happen when we're down a broadcaster, so we do appreciate your efforts to help us out because it's hard. You know, tomorrow's going to be hard. I'll be alone for most of two games and a lot of hours, and these days are not easy when you're working by yourself.
No, come on. Tomorrow for me, I'll be here 7 a.m. Just to get started. We come on at 8 a.m. Pacific, obviously. And I figure 10 o'clock tomorrow night, after we do a little bit of a post game, that'll be it for tomorrow. So these are long days, but you know something, during a baseball season, I think fans love it. They love the fact that you can get entertained for a whole day and be driving around, coming back from vacation, or be in your garage, or be at home, being cooking. I think it's a beautiful part of baseball to be able to talk about the game.
Yeah, I do too, and that's, you know, in a funny way, our role is often in the middle of the summertime is just kind of as a background noise. And that's not to say that our fans aren't paying attention. They are. That underestimates our fans. They care, and they're paying attention. But as you've said it many times, the beauty of baseball is it's on every day. It's your summertime companion. And you don't have to hang on every word that we say every broadcast to get enjoyment out of it. And so maybe rain delay is in a weird way similar to that, where okay, folks are kind of putzing around in the yard, cleaning the pool here on a Saturday evening, getting ready for the barbecue, but people haven't come over yet, so they're pouring the charcoal or whatever. So you got the stuff in the background, and okay, it's a rain delay. Well, they're still talking about my team, and it's still something to listen to, and it sounds like summertime, so the games are much more fun. I think everybody would prefer the games, but that that's where baseball broadcasting is so different from every other sports broadcasting, because the time of the year and the mood that people are in and the frame of mind in the summertime when baseball season is at its heart, people are in that mode to just kind of sit back and enjoy, and that's why. I think baseball and broadcasting, and particularly baseball and radio broadcasting, there's so much of a deeper connection in this sport than any other sport.
No, you tell the story. You paint the picture. It's the author, telling the story of the book. But yeah, I always have the picture. I'm talking to people on the Delta in a houseboat. And I'm sitting in the studio looking at Raf. But basically the whole world out there, they're having a whole summer of barbecues and everything else, and, we're here. So I love it. I really do. I think the stories of baseball, that's what connects everybody and connects the generations. But talking a little bit more about the Giants and just baseball in general, Pedro Martinez, we left off with him in our last segment, but he's on Fox now, and you hear him all the time, or MLB Network. He doesn't mince words. He says right now, go after him, knock him down, do that. That is what Pedro was all about.
I think he's one of the most interesting voices on baseball right now. And I wish he would. He doesn't want to. We at ESPN, I think, pretty seriously explored having him as a part of our coverage, maybe to cover some games. And he doesn't. It's not that he's not interested at all, but he's not as interested in traveling around, and maybe at some point he will be. He's still a fairly recently retired player who, is probably enjoying not being tethered to the baseball schedule in the way that he had to for so many years as a player. But anyway, I think he has some of the most interesting opinions of anybody in the game, and I hope someday he wants to do some more game coverage, because I do think the way that he thinks about pitching and hitting and his opinions on the game, to me, resonate as much as almost anybody out there who's a so-called expert.
No, I agree. I love listening to him. What do you think of A-Rod, if I can ask you that?
Well, I here's the thing about A-Rod. I do think A-Rod has a lot of interesting things to say. I think A-Rod, for me, ex-players, and I say that with total respect, former players know a lot more about some stuff in this business than I do when it comes to the what you experience as a player in the game. I will never be able to provide that, and that's critically important, I think, for broadcast to have some element of that. As much baseball as I watch and John watches, and as much as we feel like we know the game, and we do, it's awesome to have that experience of a guy who was actually down there and in the middle of it. But that's not the only thing that can carry you if you want to do this job. You have to also want to be good at this job. Mike Kruko is the perfect example, and every Giants fan can relate to this, I think, where Kruko, he's got all the funny phrases that he used when he was sitting on the dugout bench and grabbed some pine, and all the stuff that he makes us laugh with, and he's got the perspective of a guy who was out there, and he talks about sequencing and setting up pitching and all that stuff. And all that's great. But it wouldn't be nearly as great if Mike hadn't decided 30 years ago, I want to be a good broadcaster on top of all that other stuff. And he learned the mechanics of it, and he learned how to keep score, and he learned how to read promos. And all that stuff sounds so mundane. But once you learn how the mechanics of an actual game broadcast goes, it helps you learn how to tell those stories in the proper context to have the most impact. And that's where Mike is just a genius at it, because he decided long ago, I want to do this and I want to be really good at it. It's not enough to have seen it. And that, I guess that's my thing with A-Rod. A-Rod has decided that he wants to be good at this. Like, he really, truly wants to be good at it. And I think that's opened up a whole new career avenue for him. And he clearly has a lot of fans. Now, do I think he has the most interesting things to say? I don't. But I think that he has committed himself to being a really good on-air broadcaster. And he's practiced at it. He cares about it. And I give him credit for that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. He was stiff as a player. And even a talker as a player,
yeah.
And he's stiff as a broadcaster, but he's trying. I think you nailed it. He is trying, and he has his sheet that he has in front of him with all his notes on it and everything else, and he really is trying to be a broadcaster.
Yeah, and I think that is just such an underrated part of, you can be funny and have great personality as a player and all that stuff and be like sort of the life of the clubhouse and the best interview on the team. That does not automatically mean you're going to be good at this job. You have to also embrace the idea, and obviously Kipe has done this too in a much different way and in some ways even a more impressive way than almost anybody else in the history of the game. But, decide early that you want to learn the craft of this, which is different from that down there on the field. And that's what separates the guys. That's why John Madden became so great. You know, John Madden to me is kind of the all-time example of an analyst in a sport on radio or television who just became great and taught people the game and all that. And why? Because John, like, he learned the producer, the technical guys, the terms for what cameras were placed where. He knew how to identify, I want this shot from this camera because I know camera 6 can give me this look of this kind of play, and that's the kind of look that I want to talk about. I don't want to look at camera 2 because that's going to be misleading. Like, a lot of guys don't that doesn't register for them. They don't care. What John Madden did and what he was so genius at was he embraced all that. So he had all his funny lines and experience as a great coach and all his insight. And then he learned how to do TV in like an in-depth, deep way to where he could have produced those telecasts. I mean, he was kind of the producer for all those years. And that's what every analyst needs to do to be truly great at it. You can have good insights. You're not going to be great at TV until you embrace that kind of stuff.
Well, and you need a good partner. He had Pat Summerall, which was the perfect partner for him.
Yeah. And I think that is true, that the partner aspect of it, yeah, and being a good play-by-play guy is knowing how to get that kind of stuff out of the experts that you're working with without turning it into an interview.
Right.
You know, you don't want it to just be, hey, what about this or what about that? Like, that usually doesn't make for great TV.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Did you, I know we've got to go back to you shortly here. But have you been to Cooperstown? Have you been there a number of times? Or not?
Yeah, I've been several times. The last time, I haven't been there in a few years. The last time I was there was for John's ceremony.
Okay.
The Giants let me go when John was inducted into the Hall of Fame. I wanted to be there for my partner, and that was the last time I was there. But, yeah, I've been there a few times.
Well, I was there for the Bill King induction. It really was just absolutely wonderful, and it made me think, as we're talking about the craft. Bill King had the craft down. He understood exactly how the broadcast was to go, and he never wasted a word.
He didn't, and that's exactly right. I mean, and then most of the greats are like that. There are some who are more off the cuff, and everybody's got their own style. But I still think to be really good at this, you have to consider, like, what does the audience want? What does the audience need? You have to think about that stuff, and not just while you're on the air. You have to think about it when you're lying in bed at night, and you have to think about that when you're coming to the ballpark before a game. And those are the things that the really, really good ones just sort of come to understand over the years. And nobody was better at that kind of – I mean, Bill – and to me, that's almost the legacy of Bill King wrapped up in a sentence is – Bill gave the listener what they wanted.
Yes.
Like, they wanted the nuts and bolts. They wanted the basics of the descriptions. They wanted the exciting moments to sound exciting, the big moments to sound big. And that's what Bill did. Bill didn't make it about himself. Bill gave you everything that, as a listener, the real true basic of what you wanted, he gave you that in spades.
Boy, absolutely. All right, we're going to let you go back, take a breath, and hope we get a good report. And Talk a little bit, if you want to come back. You guys never miss the big moment. Dwayne could be talking to Mike. You could be talking to John. John could be talking about the Honeymooners. But you guys never miss the big moment, and I think that's a key for broadcasting. So, all right, go back, give us a good report, and we'll chat with you shortly. Thanks, Dave.